Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about Project Hail Mary, which, I mean, is doing pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into the reasons why it's doing well. I mean, it's not rocket science, but I mean, you know, I think that everybody just needed this more than anything else. I mean, I don't know about you. We haven't talked about it. And it's kind of like per our norm, like whenever a big movie like this, we wait until the podcast to actually really kind of discuss, unless we kind of like hint at things. But yeah. Should we just get into the Nicholas Brennan and Chuck Norris news? It's just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, as is par for this year.
Yeah. Every week. Yep.
Nicholas Brennan, who almost any nerd knows. I watched like two or three seasons of Buffy, but yeah. I wasn't even a Buffy guy and I knew who he was. He passed away at a really young age. He was 54.
Yeah.
Not much older than us.
Yeah.
He passed away, yesterday. At his home, apparently natural causes, which, you know, not to really speculate, but he had a history of drug abuse
and alcoholism and depression. Though they like, so far it's been reported it was natural causes,
my brother died of natural causes.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, years of alcohol abuse and, you know, other things that, I mean, it does
exacerbated. It runs hell on your body. He also had an identical twin. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, he did. The thing that I know him for was because I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but when I was a kid, like, I'm always somebody who knows, so if you have a disability, like, you know about it, like, you know about others that have it. It's something that comes up because they talk about it. He had a stutter. I had a stutter as a kid. and worked really hard to get rid of it. A bad stutter, fluttering stutter, like Porky Pig stutter. And he had one too. And he, like, through all of his life, contributed major amounts of money to, and his time to the Stuttering Foundation of America. And it was just something that I knew about him and always kind of, I think that whenever you when you have something like that, I think that you automatically kind of you're bonded to somebody, even though you don't know them. And he, Brennan was somebody who I always followed, Criminal Minds. There's a independent movie called Coherence.
I was going to bring that up.
I
was going to say, if you only know him from Buffy, because I'm not trying to speak ill of the dead, but
yeah,
I can only assume that his problems and his pigeonholed thing kind of limited his ability to really get out there, which is a shame because he was a really good actor. If you track down a movie called Coherence, it's fucking wild.
Yeah,
it is wild, and he is really good in it.
He's really good in it. It's a great, especially if you like time loop sci-fi timey wimey movies. That is a great.
And it's low 90 budget. Minutes long, so it just it just goes and goes and goes and goes. It's like, it's one of those movies that back in the video store days that, I mean, I discovered, but you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I fell into it because like, I've talked about this before. Like we had a place called Movie Gallery and they would cycle through their DVDs, like new releases. Once they didn't need 20 copies, they would throw them out there and you could get, like they would run sales like every other month. You could get like 5 DVDs for like $40 or something, yep. Which at the time was like really good. So yeah. Yep. I would just go in there and it might've even been more than that, but it might've been like 6 for 40 or something. Mm-hmm. But anything that looked remotely interesting, like, well, why spend $2 or $3 renting it? I'll just spend $6 a piece to own it. And like Coherence was one. There's a movie called Triangle that nobody ever fucking talks about. That's like, Coherence is kind of like this too. Like it's a movie that doesn't make a shit ton of sense if you sit and think about it for very long, but just the act of watching it is so trippy.
Mm-hmm.
I loved movies like that. And you know, it was one of those. I wish I still have. I don't have a copy of it anymore because I've had to pare down my collection so much. But yeah, that was one of those that, you know, it wasn't quite the level of Donnie Darko where it like made such an impression on me that I was like, this is catapulted into one of my favorite films of all time. But it is one that stuck with me enough that anytime I hear his name, Buffy is not the thing that I think of, mostly because I'm not a Buffy guy, but I'm always like, man, he's really good in Coherence.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. And if you want to like to do a trippy sci-fi double feature, find a copy of Coherence and then also Primer. Like both low budget. I think that they were both made under $5,000, $10,000. Yep.
Find Triangle too.
Yes.
Like it is. I mean, I guess Triangle's a lot like, what is it? Time Crimes?
Yes, it is very much like Time Crimes. So
that's probably a better movie, but you know, you probably have an easier time watching Triangle only because it's, low budget American made.
Time Crimes is low budget, Spanish film.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're like me, it's like, yeah, I don't do a ton of subtitles.
Okay. But I do happen to do a ton of subtitles. I actually own that. Vinegar Syndrome brought out a 4K of it. And like, I own it. Like, I haven't dived into it, but it's got a ton of special features. It's got like an original cut, like a different cut of the film, which is wild. I can't wait to dive into it. But yeah, Nicholas Brennan, just like a cult favorite actor. Like, that's what I would say, because he wasn't a superstar, but he was well known within the community, which, you know, and he had his troubles and he had his dark side because of his depression and alcoholism, because those two do not mix well, as you know, anybody who has had mental health issues knows. Truly tragic that, you know, at like literally 54 passed away. You know,
so I've seen a few like tribute posts mm-hmm. for him, and one of the more interesting things was he was, because of his issues, he was basically like kicked out of the con circuit. Like,
yeah,
you know, you see a lot of, I mean, not even TV actors anymore. Like it's become a major, major thing. Mm-hmm. People doing cons. But yeah, he was kind of just exiled from that. And in an attempt to still like both connect with fans and of course earn a dollar, he started doing this thing called Bowling with the Fans, where you could book a session, and for, I mean, either one-on-one, I think they did groups too, and he would meet you at the bowling alley and just hang out and bowl. And, you know, on one hand, like, that's, it's a little weird and could go sideways really, really easily.
Yeah.
But, like, the few things I've read, like, it was just, like, this dude being raw and real with the people who still, like, appreciated him. And
really?
Yeah. It was, like, I've read a few of the people talk about it, and it seemed really, really sweet and very... I don't want to say innocent, because I'm sure there was, you know, some unpacking of things there. But, you know, most actors don't want to connect with their fans in that way at all. So it's interesting. And I mean, I'm glad he was still able to, like, have that. When you're depressed, it's really hard to feel like you're have any value at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, if, especially, I imagine if you're an actor, somebody, a public figure, like, not being able to connect with people that actually, unfortunately, you know, help you feel valuable, it is really, really rough.
Yeah. Like, I can't even imagine, because he's, you know, like, dealing with that, but then also, like, the monetary issues of it all, like, it can be rough. Like, it can be rough, like, for somebody who's not done anything but acting his whole entire life, and to, like, have to, like, and most of all, to have to keep your insurance. I don't think, like, you know, it's like, let alone, like the daily things, but, like, to make sure that you have health insurance, which is a huge issue, right? Like, it's rough. It's rough, and I don't, like, in this economy nowadays, it is hard. So, like, you know, if you can find a hustle, and I mean, you know, I say hustle in the most genuous of words, because, I hope that it's not disingenuous. And it's not just, like, you know, I mean, it kind of is, it's transactional, but also, like you said, like, as long as he can, like, if he can connect with fans and fans are connecting with him, I mean, I can't argue with it, right? Like, yeah. I mean, if I did, like, you know, like, I wouldn't do it, but at the same time, there are a lot of people that, like, you know, that want to connect like that. And to have that opportunity, and as long as it's not, like, take the money and run, like, right. I'm all for it. Like, I'm definitely for it.
I mean, there is, like, if you've ever done a meet and greet at a con, like, it is so, like, most of the time, it's not really fan friendly. Like, you have, like, those real devoted, genre actors who will, like, even spend a few minutes with someone that paid a pretty penny to get a picture and a signature, and it's, but a lot of times it becomes like you're getting handled there, whether it's through them or just the con itself, or it can be really, really awkward. And I can't imagine, like, if it was, like, $100 to go bowling with this dude, and it was a guy you were like, I really like him, like, you know, and that's certainly more fun than, like, here's $100, I get to take an awkward photo with you and get a signature on something.
You know? Yeah. No, you're right. Like, like, you know, because it is, like, I always think of Norman Reedus, and like, just how much money he makes, and whenever you see him, he doesn't really, like, it's not really an interaction, it's kind of like there's a layer up, right? And I understand why the layer is up, But it's like we're kind of getting into like some really weird like stuff with the fandom and like interactions. But that's just kind of like the way that it is for certain people and how they must protect themselves, because you have to like giving yourself, like you can't give everything of yourself, right? It is mentally exhausting. So you have to keep something. So you put up a persona. But again, if there was genuine interaction, even just like from like just being a human being, like that's all I ask is like somebody be a human being when you're doing this, like give some sense of reality there. Yeah. That's all you can ask for. Like, you know, I don't know. Like it's like you said, like it's a very slippery slope, but at the same time, you know, I mean, people do what they're going to do, at the end of the day, it's just another sad turn of events that this guy is gone, like, you know, gone too early, yeah. Just way too early. And then we have another person who, like, I'm not like, I'm sad. Like, it's like, damn. But I mean, when you hear like, and this is something I think we kind of talked about in text, which is like, you don't realize how old someone is until they pass. It's like, I forget that Harrison Ford is 82 years old and he hasn't passed yet, but he's 80 fucking two. He doesn't look 82. Like, and I say this because Chuck Norris passed on Thursday night, Friday morning, in Hawaii where he lived. And like he just posted a video of like turning 86 doing like doing martial arts or some shit. And it's like, but you look at him and it's like he doesn't look 86. Like this is a man who's kept in shape since he was like 19 or 20 when he started to learn martial arts and devoted his life to like not just martial arts, but you know, to like mostly to martial arts. But I mean, like, you know, that kind of devotion in your life, it kind of like proves the whole point of like longevity and physicality coming hand in hand. Yeah. But I mean, what a fucking life. I mean, even before he didn't like the Chucks, right? Chuck Bronson didn't really hit superstardom until he was 50. Norris didn't hit like Delta Force was his like first true blue, like big hit, and he didn't
he didn't set out to be an actor.
No,
right? What, no. Isn't that the thing, like he like sparred with Bruce Lee or something?
Yeah,
right? And
yeah,
Bruce Lee was like, you should be in a movie, and kind of just pushed him into it.
Yeah, like he was known for his like black belts and like he had things like it was like karate, dude, taekwondo.
It is insane.
Jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Like if you just I saw it was like one of those like men's magazines or health magazine, like posted like just his like bona fides in martial art, not like his cinematic stuff or his TV show or just like, this is what the man accomplished in like his own discipline and just in martial arts. This is what he, and it's like that's nuts. And he was an actor and like, I mean, I know you say what you want about like the infomercial stuff, but like there, the Total Gym thing was like everywhere.
Well, it was like the Tybo stuff, right? Like people make fun of Billy Blanks, but motherfucker made millions off of that. Did you know that he made like $25 billion off of Tybo? $25 million. Like, and Chuck Norris, from what I understand, the Total Gym stuff made him millions. So you want to laugh at that, but you know what? It was a legit thing when he was like 65 or something like that. That's 20 years. That's like 18 years from where I am right now. Like I have health problems right now. That motherfucker was doing Total Gym with Christy Brinkley, who was like 10 years his junior.
Like, and you know, he's where we're concerned, I guess you could say, is problematic politically.
Yes.
Because we just don't, we don't really align with a lot of what he believed.
No.
But he also wasn't the guy. I mean, Chrissy Brinkley is left, like, I don't even know if you say left leaning. Like, she is on the left hand side of things.
Yes.
And he's on the other side. And that was the case when he brought her in to the Total Gym thing. And, like, I think she penned a tribute saying, like, we never agreed politically, but it never became, which I guess it's easy to say, well, money solves everything there, but it really doesn't if you're really firm in your belief, you know?
Yep.
What solves it is being just a person who says, well, you believe differently than me, but we believe in health and fitness and people, and like everything's so divisive now, like something like that, you wouldn't see today.
No, you wouldn't. You know, and he, like, everything I heard, he was a guy who, like, truly cared about people, truly cared about the cast and crews of his sets. You know, and, like, at the end of the day, like, you can say whatever you want about him, but, you know, he constantly remained in pop culture, and he, like, he stopped making movies, yes, like, but, like, he still had a certain amount of cachet. Like, his last movie was the joke in, what was it? Was it Expendables 2? Where, like, he shows up and all the guys are like, oh, well, like, they started making the Chuck Norris jokes. But, you know, and that was, like, right after Dodgeball. Like, that was a couple years after Dodgeball, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, he was still a, like, people still, like, kids still knew him. Like, that says something. Like, that, like, and, like, ultimately, yeah, everything I heard, go ahead.
It's one thing to become a meme because, like, DiCaprio is a meme.
Yeah.
Partly because he's DiCaprio, but, like, the meme is never actually DiCaprio. It's always about something else.
Yeah.
Chuck Norris is a meme because he's Chuck Norris. Like, that is not something that you really see.
Like, no.
And it was a meme before memes were even a thing.
He was, like, one of the prototypes for what a meme was, right? Like, we would just make, like, it was a website that we would go to, and it would just make, like, it would just make jokes. My favorite one was, there was a goat at the side of the road, and Chuck Norris rubbed its beard on it, and it turned back to life. And then there was a picture of Chuck Norris drawn with a like drawn like in a painting of Jesus rubbing his beard on a goat and then coming back to life. You know, it's like that kind of shit. Like, and that's what we knew. Like, that's like regardless of, like, so, like, every action hero, with the exception of Keanu Reeves, turns into, like, a Republican, right? Like, that's all there is to it. Eventually, they, like, they lose their careers because they lose their bodies, unfortunately, or they end up in these, like, shady dealings with these, like, Republican, like we're seeing it right now with a certain actor that I'll remain nameless that's working with Ben Shapiro, that's doing an, and like a reverse Sinners. I don't know what the fuck that means, but whatever. Fuck you, Ben Shapiro. But anywho, but he always remained, like, Norris always remained, like, a guy that didn't let his politics, like, truly interfere with fandom. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, and also, not on the Epstein list. Not anybody who had to get canceled. Like, everything I heard, like, loved his wives. Like, you know, he had gotten married a couple of times, but what guy in his career didn't? But also, like, was married to the same woman that he met on Walker, Texas Ranger, I think. Had 5 kids, like, you know, brought his brother Aaron Norris and, like, into the industry and, like, created this whole, like, thing with, like, like, I don't think that people really truly understand how much, like, why he did Walker, Texas Ranger for as long as he did, and all of the movies that they did, and why he let them remake Walker. It was because, like, there was so many people that he helped out keep employed through that time frame. And, like, you know, it just, like, you know, like, he was just a good guy. Like, he, yeah. You may have not liked his movies. You may have made fun of his movies. I mean, I never did. Like, I mean, I was a kid. Fucking Norris was the dude. Like,
yeah, low, I mean, that was one of those things, like, much like Stallone and Schwarzenegger. Like, if there was a Chuck Norris movie on, like, my dad and my grandmother, yep, my uncle, like, oh, no, this is what we're watching.
Yeah. Like, one of my dad's favorite movies was Lone Wolf McQuaid when we were kids. Like, and like I've watched that. Like, I mean, I own it on Blu-ray, of course. Like, I own most of, like, Norris's best movies on Blu-ray. I mean, I fucking reviewed them for the site. That's how much, like, there's, like, this love I have for him. That's not ironic. Like, and I think that's where, like, for me, like, it separates. Like, I don't know if anybody understands this, but I don't have an ironic love of these people. Like, when I talk about Double Impact, I genuinely talk about it from a true love. And, like, when I talk about, like, Firewalker, that's one of my favorites from him. It's like an Indiana Jones knockoff, right? Yeah. With Louis Gossett Jr. But it's like, it's the loosest he's ever been. It's the most fun movie. Sonny Landham plays like Sonny Landham, fucking Psycho Man. But it's like I genuinely love that movie. There's no irony. There's no glasses of, like, you know, like, there's no irony there. I just love the movie. And it just, like, I don't understand how, like, if you like it, you like it, right? There shouldn't be an irony there. There shouldn't be, yeah, he's a little wooden and stiff, but most of those guys are, with the exception of Schwarzenegger. Like, to be perfectly honest, most of them are pretty stiff. Like, as soon as, like, Stallone started taking steroids, man, he did not know how to, like, he did not know how to act. Like, it was like the steroids, like stiffened him up, right? It wasn't until he got into his 70s where he started, like, actually loosening up, or 60s, he started loosening up again. Like, when he started playing Rocky again, but not like the steroid Rocky, like, he started loosening up. But, like Arnold was, like, the only guy of all these guys that really was, like, you go back into his movies, and even his bad movies, like Raw Deal, but you look at him and he's, like, kind of charming and loose and goosey. And I mean, he just, like, he just has, you know, he just, like, the accent, right? Like, you know, like, the accent, what the fuck is this Austrian motherfucker doing, like, taking on the Russian, like, the Italian mob in Chicago, like, going undercover. but yeah, like, I don't know, like, it was, like, it's interesting. Like, you know, it's interesting. Carlos Ray Norris, also known as Chuck.
Yeah.
A true legend.
So, one more, like, to just wrap up a downer. I don't know if you saw, and probably most people these days don't know who this guy is, but Jamie Blanks, who directed Urban Legend and Valentine.
I heard.
Back in the late 90s, early 2000s. He passed away as well. I think he was in his mid-50s as well.
He literally, yeah, he was actually the same age, like 54. And the only reason why I knew this is because I follow a couple of horror sites that like, really announced it. Yeah, super sad, because, like, Urban Legends and Valentine,
I don't understand why he didn't have a bigger career as a director.
And he also did, like, so, like, the other side, what I'm going to really recommend, because you should have already seen Urban Legend and Valentine, But if you haven't seen his remake of the Australian cult classic Long Weekend with Jim Caviezel, it's actually if you do it with a double feature of like the original with that one back to back, it makes a really great like 1-2 combo. I think that a lot of it had to do with the fact that if you listen to his commentary track on Urban Legends and Valentine, this is a guy who exerted a lot of control over like his projects. Like he wanted it because like, I don't know if you knew how Urban Legends got made, but he actually made a, like this was back when you could, like, you know, before this whole like proof of concept thing got ridiculous, but he shot a 35 millimeter short version of Urban Legends, and it got so it was so popular that Phoenix Pictures, who made Urban Legends, bought his movie whole cloth and made him director. And so he kind of exerted this kind of like, he wanted this Robert Rodriguez control over everything. And because of the fact that both of those movies were, they were hits, but they were like hits in the way that they were like number two, like, well, Urban Legends was number one at the box office, but it was like, they were like hits for a weekend and then went away. Right. But then they became cult hits because, you know, video, but it just didn't click and he didn't want to let go of control. And if you watch those two movies, you understand why he wouldn't want to let control go, because like he had the goods. But yeah, like one of those guys that you just kind of like go, what? He didn't do anything after those two movies? But then again, you had to have seen those movies, right? Like,
yeah.
Like Urban Legend and Urban Legend 2, like I love them. I own them on like they have Screen Factory Blu-rays. Great Blu-rays. It's filled with special features. But you'd had to have seen them. And if you weren't, like, it's funny because like I was thinking about it. It's like if the I Know What You Did Last Summer remake didn't make a lot of money because people didn't remember it. And I was like, how the fuck could you not remember how I Know What You Did Last Summer? Like, what does that say for Urban Legend, right? And all these Xennials and like all these Xennials and like millennials and Gen Z, I mean, we're a part of Gen Z, right? Or Gen X. But like the Xennials and like if they don't remember those, then they would definitely not remember Urban Legends. Even the horror fans. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, a true talent. And it's kind of like, you know, in that last era, because like, you know, that's the early 2000s, right before everything started to go to digital. I mean, made like 35 millimeter, like horror films, like real horror films. And they looked like real horror films, right? Like it's really sad. Like it's kind of like look at it and go, yeah. I mean, and he was a composer too. Like that was the other thing. He composed all of his movies and did a couple of other ones. So, yeah.
It's real bummer of a week. I mean, but yeah, it is what it is. On to happier stuff. So what you mentioned you had a few things you've been watching.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I don't know if anybody has been watching Shrinking this year, but it's definitely good. It's not great, but it's good. This last episode, like these last two episodes have been kind of a sucker punch. Have you been keeping up with Shrinking?
Yeah. The end of the episode 2 weeks ago and this week's episode were real just, I mean, bummers to continue to add to the like depression side of things. But I guess it's good because we're diving into a character we've spent far too little time with.
Yeah. But also, I think that it's dealing with something that I feel like, so, fast forward just a little bit so that, like, unless you want to know what happened and you've already watched and you understand, because it does have to be talked about. The big season plot line this year was that a certain character lost a patient because she committed suicide. And, like, to be quite honest, when you deal with a mental health, like a show that deals with mental health so deeply, that it would be disingenuous to not deal with a character that loses a patient, right, and feels like naturally would feel a personal responsibility for it. And of course, like the most ironic part about this whole, the whole episode is you can see it coming. Like my wife called it, like when we were watching it, she's like, she's going to lose her. Like,
I mean, they plant the seed very early
that,
like, hey, don't mix the drugs and the alcohol. Like,
yeah,
that's not okay. That leads to bad things. And
but also Gabby's like confident, like overconfidence in the way that she approaches things. Like, it's interesting because, like, I'm glad that they gave her something to chew on, because it felt like everything was. Do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like she was just a character that came in, did some funny shit, and then, like, the bump in the road for her was like, oh, ha ha ha, I don't want to marry Derek, or I don't want to do anything with Derek because Derek is too perfect.
Or the like, the very kind of sort of brief, I'm sleeping with Jimmy arc.
Yeah.
Kind of just... It was nice to have more of her, but it just relegated her to... the girl that Jimmy was sleeping with.
Absolutely.
It just wasn't great.
And considering how everybody has gone through something already, like, it felt like a long time coming, right? Like, at least to me, like, because the other Derek had his heart attack, which, God, thank God he hasn't passed. Like, I was like,
man, if they kill this character, I don't know how I can keep watching this show. He is
he's the glue
role in the pop, you know, like,
you
don't eat a Tootsie Roll pop without knowing that, you know, you're going to get that little gooey center. So yeah, he is such just a positive piece of that show that, losing that would just, I don't know, that would have been rough, but thankfully it's just, you know, them dealing with, knowing Bill Lawrence, it makes me feel like either he or someone he's very, very close with had a heart attack.
And
because that's what he does. He writes his life or the lives of the people around him into the show as a way of, like, dealing with the emotion himself. And so it would not surprise me to find out, you know, a year from now that Bill Lawrence had a minor heart attack or something. And it's like, oh, and then I wrote about it in the show.
Yeah. And my favorite part about the season is Derek's heart attack, but also, like, Derek continually talking about sex, about the sex he's not having. He's like, he said 6 to 8 weeks.
And how Candace Bergen as his mom.
Yes. Like,
just perfect casting. It's so crazy to, like, I don't know how old she is now, but she's still just phenomenal.
Like, yeah. Like, she, like, I think she's Ford's age. She's close to 80, or if not 80.
And get it. Like, I don't know. I did not know how much I needed Candace Bergen and Harrison Ford
to, like, have a moment.
Yeah. Just, it's just perfect. So, brief aside, we only watched the first episode, but we watched Scarpetta.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The Nicole Kidman.
They dropped the it seems like they dropped the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. Whatever, Amazon. But it's fine. But we watched the first episode, and it's a treasure trove of, like, really good actors. But in case you were still sleeping on Jamie Lee Curtis, holy shit.
Yeah, like, she's, she's a really,
She's not a great person in this. Like, very over... much like her in
the Bear. Yeah.
But to a degree where it's almost unforgivable. Like, in The Bear, you have, like, the trauma of everything. So everybody is a little... Like, that whole family dynamic is just, like... fucked up.
Yeah.
But this and her and Nicole Kidman, like, go at each other in, like, vitriolic fashion. And it's just, first of all, Nicole Kidman looks phenomenal. Like, Tom Cruise is a fucking idiot. I'm happy for him and his cult, but oh my God, dude. Like, she's smart, she's funny, she's gorgeous. Like, I don't know what you were doing, man.
What Keith Urban's an idiot. I mean, come on, like,
on top of that, yes, yeah. Keith Urban is also an idiot. So
I mean, she's what, 60 now or close to it?
I don't know, but she looks incredible. Like, yeah. It's just she looks like she hasn't aged. And not like, I hate to just boil it down to her looks, but it's witch like in the, like, you eat baby souls or something, right? Because it is bizarre how you don't seem to have aged in the, much like Paul Rudd,
yeah,
where it's just like, what the fuck do you do? And mm-hmm. like, it would be easy to be like, oh, plastic surgery, but like, we see the people that try to not age themselves with plastic surgery.
Yep.
And I mean, I'm sure, like, maybe she does some things, but it's not the overdone, like, half-baked look of somebody who is obsessed with plastic surgery and making themselves look young. She just looks good. And I don't know. I also forget how good an actor Nicole Kidman is.
I like, she I don't do see...
enough. But I mean, she's been raising kids, right?
Well, so, and also, like
good AMC, on her for that.
Yeah. And plus, also, like, if you don't watch her stuff, like, we watched Big Little Lies, which, like, you know, kind of like kept us. But if you did not watch that,
I didn't watch it.
She's like the spokesperson for AMC, right? Like that's what you, like, that's what a lot of like a little like kids know her as now. Like, she's kind, like, it's not like she's a joke, but she is a joke, if that makes sense. Which is
a shame.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching Scarpetta and I was like, I think I need to go back and rewatch the others, because I think I've forgotten how good that movie is.
The Others is great. I mean, it literally has a Criterion Collection 4K.
Yeah.
Like, and if you're gonna go back, wait till the Criterion sale and buy it and then watch it on Halloween, because that 4K is phenomenal. Like, that movie is beautifully shot. If you didn't know that already. But anywho, I do have Scarpetta on my list, because I did read a bunch of, like, in the 90s, like I read, like, the Alex Cross the Sue Grafton novels.
It's so funny, because I feel like Amazon is now, is with their TV at least, maybe finally understanding the thing that they should have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, Cross just got picked up for another season. It's good. It's very, disposable entertainment in the same way that like Law and Order and stuff like that is. And I feel like Scarpetta is probably going to be in the same vein, maybe a little more intense.
It's like Bosch. Crossed. Yeah, it's like Bosch.
This is what you should have been doing.
I watched the first season of Bosch, and like our buddy Scott Phillips like lives and dies by it. I'm like, it's like SVU. I liked the books. I like Michael Connelly's books. They were like, but I think that far too many people put too much. They're like the Reacher novels. Like they're like the fan base are so devoted to those things that. Like, it's also like Reacher, right? Like, they are...
We've got Reacher, we've got Cross, we've got Scarpetta. Now.
Yeah, they had Bosch, and then they have a new Bosch, a spinoff of a spinoff of Bosch. They could
It's a prequel.
They could all come together and make a fucking Avengers type of thing. But it's...
I mean, that would be pretty cool. You bring back Jack Ryan.
Well, they already are. You know that they're bringing Jack Ryan back the movie, right? Like, they made a movie. Oh,
they're doing a movie? That's cool.
Like, good for him. Well, they actually did a trailer. Like, you didn't see the trailer?
No.
That was actually something I was going to talk to you about. It's going direct to Amazon, but it literally was a movie that they made. Like, it's like a big budget movie. He wrote this, Krasinski wrote the script. That's how they got him back, because he produced it. Like, they got one of the television show directors to direct it, but it's a movie. It's got a whole cast back and some new people. I
did hear that they're doing a third, whatchamacallit, with his wife, Monsters.
Quiet Place. A fourth, actually, because if you really think about it, like there's four in the series, right? There's the prequel that they did, that's great. Like, I loved that movie, and then there's the first two. But like, yeah, he's coming back to direct it, because you know, if or whatever the hell it was with Ryan, with the other Ryan, persona non grata Ryan, was not the huge hit that they thought it was gonna be.
That was always. Felt like one of those things where even if it's not a hit, this is a guy going like, I want to make a movie that my kids can watch.
Yeah.
I mean, every actor and director does that.
Like, yep. Everyone. You
know, it's why James Marsden is, you know, in the kids stuff.
But also there's a big difference because Marsden got a second career out of it. Like, right.
Yeah.
Like, Reynolds did not get but then again, you know, Ryan Reynolds is just too snarky. Like, he's, like he's too disingenuous to be in a kid's movie. Like, do you know what I mean? The entire time, like, you know what it is? It's like, I know this sounds weird, but, like, the moment I knew Robert Downey Jr. should not make kids' movies was the moment in, did you ever see his movie Due Date?
No.
Okay, so there's a moment in Due Date where a kid is talking shit to him, and he literally slugs him in the stomach, like, hard as human can be. Like, just literally slugs him in the stomach and, like, starts, like, threatening him. And, like, literally, like, sets him down on a couch. He's, like, this, like, trashy little kid, right? And he starts talking shit to Robert Downey Jr., slugs him and then like puts him down on the couch and goes, oh, he just has a tummy ache, to his mother, right? Like, that's the kind of, like, as soon as I saw that and the way that RDJ performs it, it's like, oh, this dude should not be making kids movies, because that is a little bit too real. And that's the way I feel about Ryan Reynolds. Like, Ryan Reynolds would talk shit to a kid and it would be so real. Like he has kids, but he shouldn't be around kids. Like, he's the drunk uncle that talks that shows inappropriate stuff. And I don't mean that in a sexual way, just like the drunk uncle that shows the R-rated movies to kids. That's who fucking Ryan Reynolds is. You never should have had him in this movie. Krasinski should have been in the movie himself. Like that's why that movie, like, I know that you liked the movie. Like, you found it acceptable. I did not like it. And half the reason why was because of Ryan Reynolds. Like, I just didn't, it didn't work for me. But anywho, neither here nor there. But yeah. Krasinski coming back to the Quiet Place stuff, which interesting. Like, it was interesting that, like, he took his shot and then he had to come back, which I don't know why you left. You literally, like, waited. Like, it's going to be 5 years now, because I think the last one came out in 2021.
He had stuff he wanted to do. I mean, I mean, we also had, like, who knows, like, if it would have come sooner if we hadn't had COVID and strike and then another strike. And,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, no, that's true.
That set a lot of stuff back a couple of years. So, you know, he could have been, like, you're sitting on the script and then, like, we have it and, you know we have at least one of the main pieces ready to go. But,
yeah, but also
other stuff comes up. And it's like, well, I have the green light here. I don't have the budget here.
Well, also, like, so the other thing is that both Cillian Murphy and Noah Jupe have become bigger commodities. And they're both coming back. Like, I mean, of course, Noah Jupe would come back because this is the thing that made him, right? They're both coming back with Emily Blunt along with Jaimin Hansu. And the rumors are also, like, somehow they're going to get, either Quinn or Lupita Nyong'o into the thing from Quiet Place day one. That's how they're going to bridge the gap of, like, because Jaimin Hansu is in both Quiet Place day one and Quiet Place two, like, it's going to be a meeting of it. So I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I'm like, I like both of them. I like all three. Like, I really do like this trilogy that they have so far. I like the first one a lot more than I like the second one. And they're also movies, like, because they were at the, like, that weird COVID time. Like, I didn't get to see the first one in the theater, but I definitely get to see the second.
That first one, just, I was on the edge of my seat that whole fucking movie.
That movie's so great. Like, when she gives birth, that has to be, like, one of, like, watching that, like, even at home was impressive. Like it's the thing that made me think, oh, Krasinski could do anything. Like this guy's gonna have he's the one guy that definitely, like, COVID hit his career hardest. That, and also, yeah, like, him wanting to do Jack Ryan for some reason. Like, it very odd. It
felt like he wanted to prove his action abilities because,
Like, you know, he was literally in 13 Hours, like, which is probably one of the best Michael Bay movies, even though it's like the setting is problematic, like, super, like, which is proven to be, like, not a true, like, a truly big, huge fabrication, like, where, like, Black Hawk Down was, like, a fairly accurate representation of the Mogadishu issue that they're portraying. 13 Hours is, like, all fiction. I was like, wow. But, it's only become more ridiculous because, you know, Benghazi and, you know. But,
I mean, that could be part of it, too.
So, yeah.
You know, yeah. You want to be, prove you can kind of do it all. Like, once word really got out about, like, the Captain America stuff, like, he was truly, like, a front runner in that. And
yeah,
it just kind of fell apart. And, like, oh, okay, well, see, here, Marvel, I can, I mean, if he doesn't, like, he probably doesn't get to do the Reed Richards thing.
No.
You know, which, but
yeah, it is, I what mean, it is. So. Exactly. I mean, but that, like, he's been trying to continually prove, like, there's something weird about, like, him trying to continually prove that he's, like, this action guy, right? Because he does 13 Hours. He did the Guy Ritchie Fountain of Youth, which is trash, but I found it a lot of fun. Jack Ryan, like, for, like, five seasons. 5 fucking seasons and a movie now. Like, literally got the, he did the Community thing, right? 5 seasons and a movie. He's got a bit part in Free Guy, which I feel like I have to revisit. Like it's been so long since I've seen that COVID era movie. I want to kind of reapproach it just because of all of the people that are kind of in it. I forget that, like, a bunch of people have, like, not big roles, but, like, small, medium-sized roles in that movie. But anyways, yeah, interesting that he's coming back to this. Like, when it comes to horror, he's a great director. Like, I'm supremely glad that he is able to do, like, he's coming back to do this. And hopefully, some fucking assholes give him like a super big budget, because Quiet Place Day Zero had a reasonably sized budget. Like, I mean, it looked big too. Like, I don't know if you remember, like the New York
scene. I actually never saw it.
Oh, you did? I never got around to watching it. Oh, okay. Watch it. Like, watch it on motherfucking.
Yeah.
That's the way that I'm gonna say them until like, you know, like everything shuts down with that deal, because everything I've heard, the deal is about to be shut down. Like, it's months away from
Adam, being the shut. One good thing that could come from this merger is that Paramount Plus ceases to exist, and like HBO Max has its problems, and you know, they fucked with it enough that it's caused some problems, but Paramount Plus is almost inaccessible.
Yep.
It just glitches, freezes, like, it's just shit. So the one actual positive thing that might could come from this is that app ceases to exist. And whoever the developers in HBO Max are, like, they just incorporate everything over there, because holy hell.
Well, okay, so, like, I've heard strong, like, I've been reading strong rumors that Wall Street, because of everything that's happening right now with the war, and also, like, I don't know if you've heard this, but Paramount is at a 5-year low with their stock price. Yeah. And Daddy Ellison,
they're about Baby to saddle Ellison's, themselves with a lot more debt.
Well, and Wall Street, who really controls this deal, is like, nah, bro, we ain't gonna have this. And the capital venture, like, firms that were supposed to be seeding this are now all of a sudden really bullish about them to take on $111 billion in debt. So this might, along with the California AG going hard at them, that this might not happen because Daddy Ellison don't have the juice with everybody. Like, that Oracle doesn't. And then they're just like, and then also, like, the other reason why it's kind of bumping from everything I've heard, like, the reason why the stock prices are going, like, is starting to plummet, is because it came out, somebody decided to leak out Zaslav's pay package.
Yeah. That's fucking.
$889 million for fucking losing everything, for literally sitting for 4 years and trashing a fucking company, a sordid company, a historic company. So yeah, like, this deal might actually not happen, and I think that Uncle Teddy knew, and he was like, give me my $2 billion because I want to pay out. And I will let this fucking, I will let this crash and burn, and then I'll buy Warner Brothers. I'll buy it in a fire sale. I'll buy it in a fire sale, and guess what? I won't give Zaslav anything, because fuck that dude.
Yeah.
Because I ain't paying out $1 billion to this asshole. Anywho.
Let's talk about something positive.
Yes.
Before we get to Project Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
This past Wednesday was my birthday.
Yes, it was. Happy birthday, sir.
Thank you. we got a present to the world on my birthday. We got the trailer.
Yes.
For Spider-Man Brand New Day. And we have not really talked about it. So what did you think?
So I have thoughts, and they're not bad. They really, okay, I'm glad that you played the video games, because I wanted to ask, how hard did they lean into those video games with the visuals from this movie? To which I'm going to say is, wow.
Yeah. I read something that I don't know is true, but we do know that Tom Holland was on the fence for a while about re-upping. And part of that, just speculation, because he'll never like come out and confirm it, was like the worry of like pissing off fandom and having to deal with like that, like falling into the Amazing Spider-Man 2 category.
Yes.
Like, well, this movie made a little money, but people will not shut up about how bad it is. And so rather than risk doing that, again, only what I've read, he spent a good long while like diving into what fans might want to see from more Spider-Man adventures, and kind of using that as a bargaining chip of like, I'm in, but here's what we need to like showcase. And that's partly why, I mean, you can look it up, but there are shots in that trailer that look like cover images from the comics. Like,
yeah,
him fighting Boomerang, him fighting Scorpion, the Amazing Fantasy 15 cover, several other things that look like they're lifted straight from the comic. Not that that's new to to comic book movies. We've had that plenty. But in this specific Spider-Man franchise, it felt like they were trying to be non-traditional about it, because we didn't have the Uncle Ben story.
Mm-hmm.
We were missing a lot of those pieces. And
yes.
And in this feels more like leaning back into the traditional Spider-Man stuff. The rumor is that Keith David, who you hear in the trailer,
mm-hmm.
is playing Kirk Connors.
Yep.
I have enough faith in like what has come before, and Daniel Destin Cretton, who has delivered some of the best post Endgame Marvel stuff. Actually, not some of, probably the best post Endgame Marvel stuff.
Yeah.
I have a lot of faith in that, but it does worry me just a little bit when you're going away from the path that you, that like, you're leaving the new trail to get back onto an old path. You know what I mean?
No, it's absolutely.
Like you were creating something new. And it was Spider-Man, but it was different. Much like the Spider-Verse stuff. Like, you're adapting something and forging new ground with it. And instead, you're going like, wait, let's pivot and go back to what those other... Because everybody loved the team up, you know, like, oh, mm-hmm. Andrew never got his flowers. Now he gets his flowers. Oh, we miss Toby. And so like, was the lesson you learned there? Like, oh, we need to get back to those kinds of villains. That's not the lesson I think you should have learned, but
no,
I still have faith in the people involved to make a movie that's fun and interesting that I want to see. It is cool to have like more comic booky influenced stuff, like maybe some of the crazier villain types. Like Mysterio was probably, well, No Way Home brought in, but literally every villain in No Way Home is from another fucking Spider-Man movie.
Yep.
So up until then, you just have Mysterio and the Vulture, really. And like the Vulture, you grounded pretty well. And Mysterio, like, you regrounded him, even though like it's still a little like far-fetched, but you did sort of reground him. You didn't have those like science-y villains. And then you brought them all in No Way Home. And so now we're going into that here. Probably a little more grounded. Scorpion, that suit doesn't look, it looks definitely more mechanical than a lot like the old, like the Rhino suit from Amazing Spider-Man. And less like, oh, he's a actual like genetic scorpion or something.
Yeah, it's very much like Rhino. Like it very much felt like Amazing Spider-Man.
And then yeah. You have the rumor of who Sadie Sink is playing, which
yeah, will the not worst go kept... away. Yeah. Well, and then you see the whole thing with the whole like mind control of the police and
yeah.
the woman that's in the tank. I mean,
that makes me think it's not Jean Grey though. Like you're giving that away in a trailer that's there to dissect. That makes me think you're saying like we're gonna play into the fact that they think it's Jean Grey and it's gonna be somebody else.
No, absolutely. So. It feels like that, but then it could also be like Sony. Okay, so like here's the thing is that like Sony has never been coy about their things other than hiding like the worst kept secrets. Like this, like, and that's where I feel like this is like not a very kind of like, this is a very unobvious thing. It was like the whole thing with the Spider-Man, right? Like,
yeah.
Like they hid him, but it was the worst kept secret in the world. Cause we all knew that they were around and they were going to show up. So it was like, when the reveal happens, it was like, oh, it's not really a big deal. So like, I actually think that because of the storyline that they're pulling from, it feels natural to add her in, right? Like it would be like, and plus it's Sadie Sink. I mean, like, if we're going to be obvious about something, you're going to cast her as that, right? Like, you're going to, like, this is where you would start your, X-Men, you would start laying the seeds for the X-Men, right? Because supposedly, like, you know, like, the bridge gap is supposedly Secret Wars, right? Because you've already got your director for X-Men. You're already supposedly casting within the Avengers movie for the new X-Men. So, it's this.
Do you think this ends with a new Professor X, like, coming to Sadie Sink's character and being like, I have a place where you can come and use your abilities. I can help you. You can train, like you can learn to understand your powers. And like, does this end with her being recruited into the X-Men? And this is sort of a prequel like to that.
Yes. And I'm going to throw something wild out there, even though I don't think it's true. What if Keith David isn't playing Kurt Connors or X? Yep.
I mean,
because think about the way that he talks in the speech and what he says. And I know he's talking to Peter, but this is a, like, you know, Professor X, like peanut butter in your chocolate in your peanut butter, especially because
I would be so here for that. I don't know that the rest of fandom would be here for that.
I know. I would like, to me, that makes the most sense. To me, like, he doesn't look like, he doesn't feel like Trammell Tillman feels more like Kurt Connors than Keith David. Like, let's be honest. Like, Keith David feels like either a Magneto or a Professor X. Like, yeah. That, like, to me, that's the thing, right? Like, that's the play. But then again, like you said, like, in this new, like, we're going to find out, and it could be nothing. Like they love to, like, they love to plant things that don't ever exist.
It's just like, y'all built a mountain out of a molehill.
Exactly. Yeah. But, I mean, we definitely are getting, like, Hulk, like, because, like... Like, he's probably battling the hand in that scene. Like,
that's definitely, yeah.
Because,
I mean, those red ninja outfits, like
yeah.
It fits in perfectly. There's a chance we see Daredevil. Charlie Cox has said he's not in the movie. But if he also said, if I'm in the movie, I couldn't tell you I was in the movie.
Yeah.
So, either way, the answer's no, I'm not in the movie.
also, like, the... Like, for me, like, it's like, okay, so, I think, like, so, like, what are the bets that Eamon Esfandi is not just playing MJ's, like, new boyfriend, but he might be, like, we don't know who's playing Boomerang or Tarantula, but they're in it? What are the odds that he plays Tarantula or Boomerang? Like, I'm just throwing it out there. Because
that would be a nice add-on. Yeah.
Because also, like, he is known for his martial arts skills. I mean, that's half the reason why he was cast as the live action Ezra in Ahsoka because in the next season, he was supposed to, like, actually, like play towards the whole thing with lightsaber battles and stunts and stuff like that. And he's known as a guy who, like, has, like, a black belt in, I can't remember if it's Aikido or Jiu-Jitsu or something pretty big, right? And so, like, why wouldn't you take a part of that? Especially because, like, also, like, Charlie Cox. Why is Charlie Cox there? Why is the hand there? Like, you know, and
why is,
like,
Punisher there?
Why is Punisher there?
How does he know? I mean, I guess everybody knows the Punisher's Frank Castle, but, like, the way Spider-Man talks to him, it feels like they're very familiar with each other.
Exactly.
Like, go home, Frank. Like, what is going on there?
The trailer's a lot of fun. And then the battle van shows up. The battle van, like it's very PG-13. Like, we know that it's going to be PG-13, but you add in these pops that you didn't get in the series, okay, you get a comic accurate, like, version that isn't, like, blood soaked. But I mean, I don't care that it's not blood soaked. Give me fun.
One of the things in the One More Day, Brand New Day storyline from the comics is Spider-Man making a deal with Mephisto.
Now, yes.
Part of that is like what happens in No Way Home. Like, that's the deal with Mephisto is everybody forgetting who he is. So you can't really do that there.
Mm-mm.
Do you think there's a way that they bring Mephisto into this and, like, have him make some other kind of deal?
I think so. I think because at this point, people, like, you don't want to waste a contract. Like, I know it sounds weird and crass, but it's Marvel and there's a business to run. And you don't want to waste the contract that you have with, because all of these contracts, from what I understand, is that after a certain time, they expire, but they pay out. They're pay or play. So if, like, you know, I know that he's kind of persona non grata now, but at the same time, he's kind of not. And why would you waste, like, he's so good in Ironheart.
I mean, he's in it for like 5 minutes.
And 5 minutes,
one of the best fucking parts of that show.
Exactly.
I mean, Sacha Baron Cohen, as Mephisto is just, it's perfect casting. He's really good in the few minutes we've gotten with him. It might feel a little out of place in a Spider-Man film, but like all of this feels a little out of place in a Marvel Spider-Man film. Mm-hmm. Like we did have Doctor Strange in the last one.
Yeah.
It would be kind of interesting to find out that it was Mephisto who did that, not Doctor Strange. I don't know. I was thinking about that and I was like, I wonder if there's going to be this like big reveal of like Mephisto pulling all these strings, which I mean, I don't know. I would love to see it happen, but so few people watched Ironheart. It would also feel like one of those things of like, is this supposed to be a big deal? Because we don't know who that is.
You know? That's true. Well, also, the other thing that we didn't mention, that there's also another rumor that Sadie Sink could play another character. And I wanted to ask you, what do you thought, because of the fact that they're using Brand New Day, like, I know that, like, it's not the same kind of powers, but what do you think of her playing Paper Doll? Like, would that be more in line with what, I mean, I know blue skin, all that other stuff, like it wouldn't be comic accurate representation, but
I think that would be far, for me at least, preferable and interesting than Jean Grey's in a Spider-Man movie. And we're shoehorning the X-Men into this.
But instead of her being obsessed with an actor, she's obsessed with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm just throwing it out there. Like, because like Brand New Day, they have so many different things that they can cull from. Like, and they don't ever do a one-to-one adaptation of these things. I just wonder how much are they using from it? Like, how much do you think that they are?
One of the things that leads me to the it's not Jean Grey thing is also like we don't know the exact verbiage of like whatever this shared contract that Marvel and Sony have.
Yes.
So is there some kind of thing where if they put it in a shared movie that Sony can also then use it? Because like we saw them use the Vulture, which I know is a Spider-Man character, but like they just took the Vulture and put him in Morbius and it was like, what the fuck is this? So I'm sure that they're not dumb enough to like have something like that happen, because Iron Man certainly isn't showing up in any of the Sony shit.
No.
But Iron Man originates somewhere else. So
like, yes.
Introducing a new version of a character in this movie, and like for whatever reason, you're like, oh shit, the contract doesn't stipulate something. And then now all of a sudden Sony has some kind of shared thing with Jean Grey. And I don't know. I just don't think they would do that and risk any kind of like, strife there. Also don't know that Tom Holland would be like, yeah, let's introduce the X-Men in my movie.
Yeah. Though if he's like, if they're like, yo, you get to be in the X-Men movies as Spider-Man, and that kind of fulfills your, like, you know, like, because you know that they make them, I mean, we all know that they make them sign 5 to 7 film contracts.
Right. And it's always like, well, you'll have a couple of movies where you're the star and then a couple of movies where you just got to show up.
Yeah. So. And like, you know, if like, you know, everything that we've heard, the Secret Wars movie is literally Tom Holland's Avengers movie. So yeah. It's one of his starring roles, right? But if you get an X-Men movie where you get to show up for 2 weeks, do your thing, and fulfill your contract, like, is that something that you do? Because, like, the other thing is that he's been very public about the fact that he's like, you know, at a certain point, I'm just going to go away. I don't want to do movies anymore. And, like, you know, like, I mean, if rumors are true.
Considering that they're now married.
Yeah, like if that's the rumors. Probably
closer than, you know, anybody really thinks, because, Have there been two people, like two major stars, so good at hiding whatever the fuck is going on in their personal life better than Zendaya and Tom Holland? Like, nobody seems to know anything. I did see her on, who was she on?
Kimmel.
I can't remember. Was it Kimmel?
Yeah, it was Kimmel.
The wedding video.
Yeah.
She's like, I brought some video, and it's just video from the movie she's got coming out with Tom Holland's face pasted over.
Onto Robert Pattinson's. Like, yeah.
That's fucking funny.
It really is. It really is.
I am excited for Spider-Man. I've seen the trailer three or four times. Well, twice in the theater now, because we saw two movies. And it played in front of both of them. And it's fun. It's just, it's Marvel. And these days, I'm always a little worried about what's going to happen with Marvel. So
I am too. But I feel okay. So, like, the one thing, and I was going to ask you about this. The one thing I feel like that has happened with these Spider-Man movies is I feel like the tension between Sony and Marvel creates something really special. Like, because because as soon as, like, Marvel is hands off, you get Madam Web, you get fucking Morbius, you get, like, these terrible fucking Sony movies. Like, what's the one? Kraven the Hunter. Jesus Christ. Like,
probably is the best made out of all of them, but it's still not good.
No, Aaron Taylor Johnson has no right being in anything with a starring role anymore. Same way with Skeletor himself, baby bloodbath. How is he 50 years old? He doesn't baby bloodbath Jesus.
Just like, how are you not aging,
Jared? Yeah, and why are you just and why are you, like, thank God he is not, like, I saw they had a new preview for He-Man, Masters of the Universe. They refused to call him He-Man Masters of the Universe, just Masters of the Universe. And, like, they still haven't had him talk. Because nobody wants to know that Skeletor is played by the worst of the worst. Even though it kind of meta works for it. But anywho, do you think that it's the tension between the two? Because Feige hates Sony and Sony hates Feige so much that they create this. It's just enough of a back and forth where
nobody's completely getting their way.
We get
something that's actually fun and palatable and just a good time, rather than something that's just like
world building to the next bullshit fucking Avengers movie,
or just absolute dreck.
Trash. it's Morbin time.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for those memes again. I'm just waiting for them, like, to show up, like, for Brand New Day. Like, you know, we know the ending stinger. It's Morbin time. Yeah. But yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I'm hopeful because of that. Because of the fact that, like you said, it's like nobody's getting their way. So they're just making, like, the one thing I feel like in each of those Spider-Man movies is that they're complete stories. They're not building blocks to the next movie or to an Avengers movie.
Here and there, but it is like you are getting a movie. Like, and to like a little bit of Marvel's credit, like, part of Sony's problem with the Amazing Spider-Man franchise was they, especially the second one, was just like, we're going to world build the way Marvel is. Like,
yeah.
And that whole fucking movie is just trying to build a whole bunch of different sections and not, like, take their time with things. So,
no.
I think it's going to be good. I hope that there's some real surprises and that everything we're seeing is not exactly what it is. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I will say this much, like, I can only hope and pray. What gives me hope is the tone is very Spider-Man 2, which is my favorite Spider-Man movie, because of the fact that it's back to let's abuse Pete, because that's where I feel like it's the best, is when you abuse Pete. Like, and I mean that in the best, like, again,
that's what makes him who, like, that's what makes him the character that we love. I mean, even going to the Spider-Verse movies, like, Miles is great and he is the star and we love Miles, but like, it's the hapless, like, Peter B, like, shenanigans that you're just like, there's Spider-Man.
Yeah, like, but also like, the other thing is with those other movies is like, Miles gets it, like, has his own issues.
Yeah, he does.
Like, he has his own issues, which is very tied to Miles. Like, the other thing is, I like, there's a want and, like, for me, there's this want and hope to God that Holland is like, we need to bring Miles in. We just need to bring Miles in. But we know that it's not. But there's this one.
They've been told. They cannot touch Miles until the Spider-Verse movies are done.
Yep.
So, you know, and credit to them. Like, I appreciate that they don't want to step on toes there. Because that set of films is
special. It's special. Like, it. Like, I mean, I think that, like, this is kind of like a perfect segue into Project Hail Mary, which is like, Lord and Miller just have the Midas touch when it comes to, like,
I do want to talk about that movie, but Lord and Miller specifically.
Yeah.
Why, like, time and time again, we see these guys direct movies.
Yeah.
And they're always, I don't think they've had a miss.
No.
What the fuck was wrong with Solo?
Nothing. Nothing.
I need to see that fucking movie, man.
I need to see their version, their 80% done version. I guarantee. Okay. I know what it is. It's, I know this sounds weird, but I feel like they went way out with, they should, okay, here's my theory. They really should have cast, like, so I heard this weird, weird deep state rumor that they really wanted to cast Channing Tatum as Han Solo. And because their take on Han Solo was a kid who was in out of his element with people that were much more capable than he was. And he always sounds like a joke
good take.
Exactly. Like the whole, my name is Jeff. Like,
yeah.
And, but if you think about 21 and 22 Jump Street, and if you take Channing Tatum out of it and make him Han Solo, that makes sense. Like, a guy who's a goofball that doesn't know that he's in the middle of a serious Star Wars movie is so fucking wildly, like, daring to be great. Like, and so, like, they hired, part of the reason why they hired Alden Ehrenreich was because he was a nimble performer that they liked, like, his goofiness with comedy. And what Kathleen Kennedy could not get her simple brain around, from what I understood from all of this stuff, was that everybody else was playing it dead serious, and he was playing it, for lack of a better word, very broadly.
That's what Harrison Ford is doing in Star Wars.
Correct.
Like, everybody else is in this, like, do or die fucking war film, and he's just like, what? I mean, there is one of the most famous Han Solo scenes is him running around a corner, like, to a wall of fucking stormtroopers and like screaming the, you know, like, it's very broad, and like the comedy with him and Chewie, like when they're fixing the Falcon, it is very like slapsticky, you know?
I don't like
I'm watching Project Hail Mary and I was like, there's no way their fucking solo movie was bad.
No.
Maybe not the movie that Lucasfilm wanted.
Well, but the movie
there's no way it was fucking bad. There's no way.
No, it wasn't. It was just that she didn't like Kathleen Kennedy. They said from the moment that Disney made the dictum to hire them, it she didn't like anything that they did. Like it was not her choice. It was literally Disney's choice because Disney wanted them because they were like, they were the future. Like they wanted like essentially from what I understood is that they wanted Lord and Miller for the same reasons that Sony locked them down until like locked them down with their production company because they wanted them for their animation, their writing and directing. Okay, that makes sense because Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, right? Has netted them hundreds of millions of dollars and like legitimized Sony animation. Before then they were just making fucking Angry Birds movies. Like this is now a studio that has like I've heard that they had their fingers in GOAT in a big way, and it's a part of the reason why that movie was a big hit. Was because they kind of helped out with GOAT to make $100 million, a movie about a goat playing basketball. Like we talked about how what a joke that is, but made $100 million, and now I'm probably gonna watch it when it comes to VOD. I'll give it a chance when it comes to Netflix in June, right? Like I'll be like, oh, and then you know what? I'll probably end up going, you know what? It wasn't half bad. It wasn't half great, but it wasn't half bad. But Lord and Miller were dictums to Kathleen Kennedy who just didn't get them. Like that's everything I've heard is that like literally was planning like it says a lot to me that literally the day that they were fired the day that they had filmed like they had filmed that was contractually obliged to them to be on set without having an issue with the DGA, which is 80% of the schedule, where they are contractually obliged and they didn't need to do a director's cut, but they didn't have any say in anything, was 80% of the shoot, right? So they filmed 80% to the day, fired them. Got fired because if you fire them before, you have to pay out their full salary and then it becomes an arbitration. You do a day after and they are obliged to, at 81%, they are obliged to create a director's cut. And then it became an issue of us versus them, where she fired them at 80%. And then just tossed out. I heard that she they had to film at 180%. They filmed a brand new entire, like it was none of their, like supposedly they said that there's some of that movie in there. There's none. Absolutely nothing of their movie exists. I mean, that's why
they didn't make any money. Because they made two fucking movies and could only sell one of them.
Yeah. So. Why make two movies when you can make one movie at double the cost?
Double the cost.
Jesus Christ.
And not that, like, we enjoy Solo. That's not knocking the movie that we got. But, so on to Project Hail Mary. This movie is fucking great.
Man, they leveled up, man. They leveled up. Like, Lord and Miller, I didn't think they could get any better. And then they were like, hold my beer. Like, they literally, like, it's my favorite thing that I've seen in a long time. Like, I'm not saying it's the best, but it's my favorite, my favorite theater experience in a long time.
Yeah, it is an emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. It is thrilling in the same way that the Sandra Bullock movie is thrilling.
Yeah, Gravity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, and I do like Gravity as well, but Gravity is a movie that constantly relies on you being like on the edge and terrified of what's coming next. And this is almost the opposite of that, where it's like, yes, there are moments of like, oh shit, what's going to happen? But mm-hmm. a lot of it relies on you like being in awe of things.
Yes. In awe, but also not in the way that 2001 is like,
right.
Like in awe of things. Like it, like it's interesting because it's both a human story. Like it's, I'm going to make a comparison. It very much feels like to me that they understood how, like, when I watched it, the thing that came over me was this sense that they watched Lawrence of Arabia like 1,000 times because it understood the complexity of human beings, but the grand scale of an epic. Because that's what you get. You get the complexity of a human being because he's not a hero. I mean, it's very much by the end scene. And I'm glad that I started reading the book and then I saw the first trailer and I was like, nope, I have to wait until after because the reveal.
It's funny because I was reading some stuff like some people, especially interviewing, what's his name's Andy Weir?
Andy Weir. Right? Yeah.
The author of the book who also wrote The Martian. Dude's written 3 books and 2 of them have been adapted to fantastic fucking movies.
Yes.
So,
and the third one is a great movie. It's Artemis, a space heist. Yeah. Artemis, Project Artemis is, if you haven't read it or actually go on to Audible and listen to the audiobook because Rosario Dawson reads Artemis.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Anyways, continuing on.
But it was like, oh, you're selling the movie based on a reveal that happens in the book talking about Rocky.
Yeah.
And like the whole, and that is like a selling premise in the trailer is like, oh, there's an alien and he's going to make first contact. And like, are they buddies? Like what's going on? And to me, I was like, that's not the reveal. The reveal is that this man was not willing, like literally in a way that I did not expect, they make him the only person capable of doing this. It tells you that in the trailer, but it feels like one of those eye rolling things where it's like, okay, he's a teacher and he's the only one that can do this. They totally sell it to you in the movie. And the reason why he's the only one makes perfect fucking sense. And he's unwilling to do it. He's unwilling to possibly die in space to save the Earth and all of humanity and its future. He's unwilling to do it.
He's not just unwilling. He's a coward. Like, and like, but you built up to that. You build up to, like, it's a perfect conceit of, like, an eye-rolling thing where they're like, oh, amnesia. And you're like, oh, come on. But then the way that they use it and then the final reveal after you've become attached to him and he says what he says and then they force him into it because he's a coward. Like, he's, like, literally a coward. But you've built up to this point. You're not going to not be attached to him. Like if you found this out like right away, like you would be like, oh man, fuck this dude. Because but it's so human, and that's why I say Lawrence of Arabia is because Lawrence is not a good person in that movie. And Rylan Grace is not a good, like, he's a hero, but he's not a hero. Like he's a normal person. He's literally a school teacher, right? But he is the person that needed to go. and you spend the entire movie. Like, that's the beautiful part for me about Project Hail Mary, is, and the thing that I want to watch, like the reason why I want to instantly watch it again, is because they spend this whole movie building this character. It's all it's a character movie, like with with spouts of like visual grandeur, right?
And it's almost entirely just him. Like him. There's minutes where it's him and other people, and I, like, bravo to the like notable actors who come in to just do like a couple of scenes, man. Like the crew that is supposed to go, like, they're like, I know that guy, I know her, like
Ken Leong, you know, who played June Tao in Rush Hour, like, and, comes in. She's the T-Mobile girl.
Milana Weintraub.
Yeah, Milana Weintraub. Yeah, that's right.
It's so fun, and you see them, and you're like, that they're not in this movie much. It is just him and the special effects artist, because holy shit.
Well,
Rocky's some of the best stuff we've seen on the like special effects puppeteering, like whatever they use front, in a long, long time, because it's not just CGI.
No, it's not. Like, so it was 95% puppeteering, like literally, like one of the things that I guess like Lord and Miller and Gosling both agreed upon was that Rocky needed to be a puppet. It needed to be on set. He felt like he couldn't act unless it was on set. Like, he wouldn't do the movie unless it was on set. And they were like, no, we're going to do it. And like, literally, like, did, like, it's part of the reason why the budget was so big, was because a lot of it is physical. Like, the sets for this movie were like there was some CG assists, but it was mainly sets, which you can tell, like, when it goes into IMAX, because we saw it in 70 IMAX, when it goes into the IMAX, like, there's no, like, there's a reason why Cameron spends 3 years making a movie, like, that's all CG. Because if you don't spend 3 years rendering it in IMAX in 70, you can very much see the shit. Yeah. This movie is seamless. Like, you can't tell what's set and what's set extensions. It's so, like, and then you watch Rocky, and Rocky's a real character. Like, it's a rock with five arms and no arms, but... I mean,
it's a rock spider. Like, that's what it exactly. is. It's a rock spider.
But you literally sit there, like, I will confess, like, there's a moment where I laughed, cried. I was crying and laughing at the same goddamn time because of this goddamn rock. I sat there laughing, and I said under my breath, goddamn rock spider. Because they got me. Because that's how good this movie is. But also, it's Gosling. Like, have we never, like, can we now put him with the rest, like, the Wayne, like, is there anybody... Like, I don't even know how to pose this. Is there anybody that's a superstar in the way that Gosling is a superstar right now? Like, he's at his apex. Is he at his apex? Have we not seen him? Like, is there another level that we're gonna see?
I don't know. I think there is, because I don't think he's delivered his true, like, Oscar. Not that anything he's done hasn't been truly, like, Oscar worthy, but he hasn't delivered that performance yet.
Oh, he's getting an Oscar. He's getting a nomination for this. Like, I full well expect. This is going to be like a F1 Sinners kind of situation, where Lord and Miller are going to get nominated. It's going to be a huge hit, right? Like, it's already predicted. I just looked. It made $33 million its opening day, which is the biggest.
I think it's on projections, it's like 78 or something like that.
70 to 80, which is literally 30 million more than they thought it was going to make like 3 weeks ago.
Like, and certain, like, not to get into the business side of things, because I hate that. Feels like we talk about that a lot, but it is also fuck Amazon, but like it is the thing that they need. Like MGM needs this.
Yes.
Like it sucks that Amazon owns MGM, but like as a movie production studio, they need this because they have not made any money in a long time.
No. And like this is like they threw the like this is Amazon doing it right. Like the right people leaving them alone and giving them $200 million to make a smart, smart movie. Like this feels like zero studio interference. This feels like in a way like something that shouldn't be made now. Like, do you know what I mean? Like it feel like there's a reason why when you first see the like when the MGM logo shows up, it's the one from 2001, the 69 logo.
Yeah.
Because it feels like a movie from 1969 or in the 70s, right? It feels like this feels like if Lord and Miller were in like were like 75, 76, they would have made this movie with MGM. And it would have been the same exact movie except for Doug Trumbull would have done the special effects. Because it very much feels like a character. It's a character piece. It's a buddy movie. But more than anything, it's about Gosling's, Ryland Grace and the mystery of how he ended up there.
My favorite, and I mean, it's not in the movie. It's literally from the book. Like, sneak joke is that it's called the Hail Mary and he's the only survivor and his name is Grace.
Grace.
So it's literally the Hail Mary full of grace. the movie never goes to any like painstaking way to, I didn't read the book, so I don't know, but literally just sitting there, I'm like, his name is Grace and he's on a ship called the Hail Mary and he's the only one that's alive. So that's a good subtle joke.
Very much so. Like, but I mean, the movie is filled with shit like that, right? Like leave it to, like, isn't it ironic? Like the irony of who's the person that saves not just Earth, but the universe. A coward, but also a teacher, a school teacher. Yeah. A school teacher that, like, man, like, I, like, at the end, I got choked up. Because all he wanted, like, he says it, like, and that's how smart the movie is it never smacks you in the face with, like, the setups and payoffs that it's doing. He literally says, I just want to teach. I want to teach the kids. And they don't let him teach. But at the end, what happens? He finds his happy place again. Like, you never see him as happy as he is when he's playing lava with the kids. Yeah. Like, and it's just, it's kind of like this, it's like these smart touches that Lord and Miller, like, kind of like, and Drew Goddard, like, make in the movie. It's like, you know, the moment, the karaoke moment. Right?
Oh, like, my God, man.
Oh, like,
that's fucking, like, not only is it, like, just, not even, it's not even a gut punch. It's like a heart punch. Like, it's so emotional. And it ends on her going, that's enough.
So that's enough.
Throwing the mic down. Like, yep. It's, like, it, because that's who that character is. And, it's such a good moment. I mean, the movie's filled with just phenomenal moments visually and just touching. And I don't know, like, there's not a bad thing. Like, there's no missteps in the movie. And I watched it sitting next to somebody who did very recently read the book and was like, oh yeah, it's pretty spot on. So seems like maybe the key to adapting a beloved, well-regarded novel is to stick as closely to the novel as possible.
My wife said
there's things you have to cut out, but yeah, you know.
my wife who read the book too and considers it one of her, like, she's not even a sci-fi fan and considers it one of her favorite books ever written, said that they did a perfect adaptation, that it was like there was it was the right way to adapt it. There were changes, but the changes added to the whole milieu of the movie.
Just leave this in the hands of executives and like studio notes and even test audiences, what you would have wound up with is an ending where he saves Rocky and goes back to Earth.
Yeah.
And that's just not the right ending. It's not.
No, it's not. Like, after, my wife said, like, after, like, we were watching it, and she goes, you know, it's very apparent in the book, but he tells you because it's an inner monologue. And it is. Like, it's a very first-person narrator book. She's like, he kind of tells you the reasons why, but not so much. But in here, I like it more because it's never said implicitly, but it's like, fuck you, Earth. I'm going to save you, Earth, but fuck you, Earth, because you made me go. And that's not my home anymore, because I couldn't
they point it out to him, like, when they're getting ready to drug him and put him on the ship. She's like,
you have no attachment. You don't have
a family.
Yep.
You don't even have a dog. You have the kids that you teach. Yes. But like, who else? Why couldn't you do this? And it's because he's a coward, which, I mean, I don't know that I would want to die alone in space, but it's also just the thing of like, you are the only one that can, but he doesn't want to feel special. Like, the one time in his life he set out to feel special and stand out from everybody else, he got
his life taken away from him.
Yeah. Just he got drove out of the community he thought he had, you know, like, by making, you know, these crazy claims that you don't need hydrogen and
oxygen to create life. To
make life.
Yeah.
And I love the moment where he thinks he's going to prove his theory.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to be able to shove this back in people's faces. And it's like, oh, no, 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 no.
No,
like,
no, no. I was wrong. Like,
they're made of the same shit we're made of.
Yeah, exactly. Which is great. Like, I also like, it's funny because it's like, I love the fact, like, we are shown that he's a coward through like comedic bits. Like, when he's like, he tells, like, you know, he tells Rocky, like, you know, like, when Rocky finally figures out, he puts one and one together, that he's like, well, what is Grace doing? A question. And I love the way that Rocky talks. It's so good. But, fist my bump. He goes, well, I was going to stay, I'm going to die. And then he goes, well, Rocky will give, like, you know, it'll only take 6 years. And then Ryland starts crying and goes, oh my God, thank God. I was just lying.
It was all bullshit.
I was just saying it. But it's funny, but it's also like, he's right. Like, he's not, he doesn't want to die. He doesn't want to but then he gets, it's one of my favorite things from Three Kings, where he's talking, I don't know if you remember, but there's this moment in Three Kings where George Clooney is talking to Spike Jones, and Spike Jones is like, well, I'm a little scared. And he goes, well, you know, you don't get the courage. He's like, you get the courage to do the thing you do after you do the thing you do. And it's very much illustrated in this movie, is that he doesn't become courageous and the hero that he needs to be until after he's done the thing that he's needed to do. Like, without all of the things that happened and without Rocky sacrificing that time, he would never go back to save Rocky, because Rocky is, like, you know, up until that moment, he's never had, like, the thing is, like, the most beautiful thing about the movie is that it's an alien that shows selflessness and shows what friendship is to Grace more than any human. So of course, I mean, he's gonna.
It is such a great analogy for, like, having a pet that you truly care about.
Yes,
and I know Rocky's like, it's a little maybe demeaning to compare him to a pet, but it, like, the minute we're watching it, and when Rocky comes on the ship and he starts vlogging about Rocky being,
yeah,
like, I was like, that's Ripley.
Yeah.
Like, that is my dog. Like, she is just like, what are you doing? Where are we going? What's going on? What's over here? What are you eating? Like, what, are you sleeping? I'm going to sleep right on your head. Like, it's that whole thing.
No personal, like, space.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is so, like, but it's also the thing of, like, you know, if you talk, like, Steph and I had this conversation. I was like, I feel his pain there, but the flip side of that is, like, if it was like, oh, well, Ripley is actually an alien from space. There's a planet full of Ripleys. You can go live there. You can communicate with them. I'm like, sign me up, man.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Like, no, absolutely.
Because as annoying as it can be, like, my happy place is, and always will be, like, just being with my dog, being with Ripley, and, like, doing whatever, sitting on the couch watching TV, making dinner, like, sitting at our I don't know what you call it, island or whatever, putting a puzzle together, and, like, she sits on one of the, like, raised bar chairs, and I'm sitting on another one, and Steph's sitting on another one, like she's just a person and this is where she belongs. It's just like, it's that stuff. And, you know, it's so just emotionally fulfilling. And it is a hopeful movie in a time where it seems like there's no fucking hope at all for humanity. Like, we're all just shit. Like, nobody, and he is, like, he is a selfish, like, person who is not gonna do what's in for the betterment of mankind. He's not gonna do the thing that he should do that will save everyone, because he's selfish and we're all selfish. And it, you know, sometimes we have to be, like, not in the Anakin Skywalker way of, like, made to do the right thing, but we kind of have to be, like, made to do the right thing. Like, you know, and that could be seen as bad, but, you know, ultimately two civilizations get to live because of it, because Rocky probably couldn't have figured out any of that. It took, and that's the other thing, is, like, it took two people who couldn't even communicate when they met figuring it out. Like, it's that collaborative thing of, like, somebody, another person, or what, that you look at and go, like, I have nothing in common with them. Like, it would be so, and he does kind of, you know, he's very scared when he first meets Rocky.
Yeah.
But he also trusts, like, they learn to trust each other. And, he couldn't have figured it out without Rocky. Rocky couldn't have figured it out without him. It's, you know, this all around, it's just such a wonderful, wonderful movie that, yeah, I don't know. It's exactly what we need. I hope it continues. Like, I hope it's one of the rare movies where it's like, oh, the second week drop off was like 20% or something, because everybody who went to see it this weekend went to work or home or church or what, and was like, you have to come with me to see this movie. It's incredible. Yeah.
Like, it's one of those movies that is going to be like, it's a word of mouth movie. It's like, oh no, you need to come and see this with me. You yeah. need to come and see this movie with me because it's like, I need to experience this with you. Like, that's the thing, is that it's what, like I was talking to somebody this morning in regards to it. Like, I was just texting somebody really quick and I was like, you need to see it because it's what we originally got into watching movies for, which is an experience. It's like, it's like what they used to call, and it was used sparingly, but now it's called it all the time. It was a cinematic event.
Yeah.
Like, it's an event. It's a true event.
The shit that Spielberg used to do.
Exactly.
It's Jurassic Park. It's E.T.
It's kind of like E.T. or, like, it's E.T. for adults, right? Like it's like, not to say that E.T. wasn't for adults. It has that magic to it that it feels like a magic trick that only movies can do.
So you saw it in IMAX. I saw it in IMAX. I don't know. We haven't talked about our screenings, but like, we saw it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday, which everybody's working. I think spring break is going on right now in my area. I'm not 100% sure, but there were families in our screening. It was fairly full, but there were parents with their kids there. And like, that was really something, you know, like, because this is not a, it's not a cartoon. It's not Super Mario Brothers. It's not like, this is not the kind of thing you think you'd see families at. But then like, there were also like, right before we went in, there was like a group of like five dudes who I would be annoyed with them if they were in line in front of me anywhere. Like,
yeah,
just like dude bro annoying, like all like just cutting up with each other, and I'm just like, oh my god, like it's just, I'm too old for this shit. But like, they sat like a row in front of us and were just like enraptured with the movie. Like, there was a family with two little girls sitting behind us, and the little girls, every once in a while would whisper to their mom or their dad, like, what, like asking them what that thing, like whatever just happened, like, what does that mean? You know? And like, I don't know. It just, like, it was such a good experience. All around. I love this movie. I don't know if it'll wind up being like my favorite movie of the year, but it certainly will be like one of my favorite like movie going experiences this year. So
it's definitely my favorite so far. Like you said, should it be like, will it be? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see, because I'm planning on seeing it at least one more time. I do want to see it in IMAX.
Cynical. I think the problem is I'm too much of a cynic that it's so positive that I love it, but like, also there will be something kind of sort of fun and cynical that comes along, and I'm like, that's my favorite movie of the year.
I think that, like, I'm not 100% sure. Like, I mean, we'll see. It's early in the year. There's a lot more to come out. I mean, I keep like, I gotta stop seeing the like, I just saw the new trailer for The Odyssey, and damn, that looks impressive. Like, especially in 70 IMAX, brother. I know you're not the biggest Nolan stan, but that just looks impressive. Like, just impressive. Like the sheer physicality of it. I'm like, good Lord. And then like, you know, then there's also the possibility of the things that we don't know that are going to come out like, you know,
I mean, I didn't know about the, shit, what's it called with, John Malkovich and,
oh yeah. The McDonough film. We hadn't even talked about that trailer. The new Neil McDonough film, Wild Nine Horses, or Wild Horses Nine, which is like some wild CIA. Like, I mean, it's Neil McDonough. Like, what do you expect? Like, you know, back in Neil McDonough territory, right? Like, not to say that did you watch The Banshees of Inisherin?
I didn't. I never got around to it.
You got it, dude. Like, especially because I know how much you like his work. That one is very much, and I know that you like his brother's movie Cavalry. That's very much of the similar type. And of course, I mean, Brendan Gleeson, you can't go wrong, right? But yeah. Anywho, yeah, no, that one. I mean, there's so many people that are bringing out movies this year, like, and they all seem possessed to make a good movie. And if this is like the tip of the iceberg, if this is like Lord and Miller throwing down, like, and them being inspired, like, all the rest of the people that are making movies, if they're as inspired as they were, man, we're in for a great year of cinema. Like, we truly are. Or at least another year of like big swings, which I'd much rather have. I'd much rather have a big swing movie year. Right. But we'll see. I mean, this is like a truly special movie, I feel like. And one that should be seen on the big screen. Greg Fraser, the director of photography, just creates like candy colored poppy sci-fi imagery. Like the moment where they're collecting the samples and it goes into that magenta X-ray vision is like one of the best like visual sequences, along with Daniel Pemberton's score, is like one of the most perfect moments I've seen. And that score was fucking rocking in our theater. It's an amazing experience. And like, to speak to what you were talking about with like the communal experience of the movie, we had a little kid behind us, and you could tell he was in. And I think that he made us all cry more was because when Rocky sacrifices himself to save Grace, and then you find out that he's in the thing, and we already know that he's been he's asleep. The kid literally, I'm gonna cry just thinking about it. The kid was like, "No, Rocky, don't go to sleep." And then like you could just like he started bawling. And then like we all like you could I looked around and you could tell like he just possessed us all. Like he zapped us, like this little kid zapped us. And it was just, but it's a great moment because like you get this little kid who like that was me when I was a little kid with E.T. Like, you know, E.T. died and you're like, "No, E.T., don't die." Yeah. It's a wonderful film. Like, you know, Lord and Miller, man. They continue unabated. Like, you know, I mean, you know, still like you said,
proving Solo. That they would have made probably the best fucking Star Wars movie in the whole Disney bunch.
Yeah.
And we didn't get to see it. So fine, whatever. All right. So next week, we're definitely talking about Ready or Not 2.
Yes.
I've seen it. Adam hasn't. Also, probably the first Ready or Not. I don't know if you're going to get a chance to see it, but we're also planning on seeing They Will Kill You, which looks like
fun. Yeah, well, it also looks like it's like the bastard cousin of Ready or Not. And I'm very much so looking forward to that. I don't know if my wife is going to want to see that one because it has a bunch of cast and she loves horror movies like that. So I'll have to run it past her to see if we can talk about it next week, because I didn't realize it was coming out next week. Yeah. Like so close to like, give me a month or two between like those kinds of horror movies.
The problem is, I think that they had to go before Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
you can't go after. I mean, it could be like counter programming to Mario.
Yeah.
But like that movie.
But everybody is going wants to
destroy everything. So like the runway post Mario, I think is clear. Like it's got at least 2 weeks where nobody is fucking with that movie.
Well, did you see the new trailer? Did you see the new trailer? Yeah. Like it just looks impressively big.
Yeah.
So I will definitely, that one, like, I'm genuinely surprised at how that one looks. Like, I'm like, oh man, like, that one actually might be one of those rare sequels that gets me locked in to the, like, to a thing that I'm not, like, I didn't hate it, but I wasn't, you know what, it, like, I mean, I think we've said this before. If they had just cast somebody different than Chris Pratt.
Yeah, he's not. I don't think he's great, Mario. I rewatched it about a week or so ago. Mm-hmm. And, like, still, I think I texted you. Like, the absolute best part of that movie is the depressed, like, weirdly happy star in the jail. In the cell.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's so fucking funny.
But my favorite part is, like, I'm back. Yeah. Like, everybody knew that he was, like, the scene stealer. And they were like, no, we're going to get it. But it looks impressive. And, like just, like, it's going hard into the Mario universe in a way that I did not think that it was going
Birdo, to. Man. Birdo. Yeah.
Seriously. And we still haven't heard Donald Glover playing Yoshi. Though we've heard who's going to, like, Benny Safdie is about to have, like, an epic actor run. Because he's playing Bowser Jr. And then he's playing Agamemnon in The Odyssey. And I can't remember, there's one more movie he's in. So I am genuinely, like, I'm excited for it. Especially because it has some of my favorite, like, Mario characters. Like, Luigi as the frog. Like, and it, like, I almost hope... It sounds like it almost like I would love it if Chris Pratt's like role consists of like maybe four lines and
it's just Luigi.
It's Luigi. Yeah, it's what's his name? I want to call him Charlie Parker, but he's not Charlie Parker. Charlie Day doing the motor mouth stuff, and then him going woohoo, basically the Mario that we know from all of the Nintendo games. No talking, right? Like it just the woohoo, like that's all I want from him, and then everybody else talks. That would be amazing. Amazing. But yeah, I'm genuinely excited for that one.
We'll be back next week talking about some horror thriller stuff, and until then, check out everything else we do over at x1files.com, or you can check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com, where we are neck deep in some home video content that I'm very excited about. I think I'm planning on doing a column about some stuff that I've not gotten for review, but like right now, like 4K stuff that's coming up that you guys are going to get reviews for include the Jamie Foxx Academy Award winning movie Ray. What else? So we got, Uncommon Valor, Somewhere in Time, K2, like I've got a bunch of things, and then like there's some really, really great, like Mimic, Guillermo del Toro's Mimic, if you know that movie, in the director's cut form in 4K, which is wild. So there's a lot of good stuff out there right now, and stuff that I don't even have access to for review wise. Like there's just really some really great 4Ks out there. Groove has a sale on steelbooks right now, 4K steelbooks, for super cheap. And especially if you're a steelbook collector, which, you know, some of us are and some of us aren't, and they cost a premium. So yeah, you know, get it out there. Yeah, so the movieowl.com.
And we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys next week. Number one Star Wars, number two comics, number three Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, number four Mario, number five Weird Al, number six Batman, number seven Cal, number eight The Simpsons, number nine TV, number ten every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say hello together, you with me now. Nerds ruin everything.